I know what happened.
Yeah, but you don't know what happened after.
His voice had changed again. He liked this. He liked seeing her squirm. He was absorbing her fear like a succubus. Lydia heard an echo of the last words Paul Scott had ever spoken to her.
Tell me you want this.
Her whole body shuddered at the memory.
Are you scared, Liddy?
Slowly he removed his foot. She had a second of relief, but then his fingers brushed across her breasts. Lydia tried to jerk away. His touch got harder as he moved his fingers to her collarbone, then down her arm. He pressed his thumb against her bicep until she felt like the bone was going to snap.
Please!
The word slipped out before she could stop it. She had seen the movies he liked to watch. She had seen his files filled with women he had raped.
Please don't do this. How about this?
Paul grabbed her breast. Lydia screamed, his hand clamped down like a vise, and then he squeezed harder and harder. His fingers gouged deep into the tissue. The pain was unbearable. She couldn't stop screaming.
Please, she begged. Stop!
He let go slowly, releasing one finger at a time. Lydia gasped for air. Her breast throbbed from his fingers piercing the flesh.
Did you like that?
Lydia was going to black out. He had stopped, but she could still feel his hand twisting her breast. She was panting. She couldn't catch her breath. The hood was too tight. It felt like there was something around her neck. Was his hand around her neck? Was he touching her? She turned her head left and right. She tried to wrench her body from the chair. The chain dug into her stomach. She lifted her hips off the seat. Clicking. She heard clicking. A spring bending back and forth. Was he bouncing the chair? Was he jerking himself off? There was the sharp smell of urine. Had she wet herself? Lydia squirmed in the chair. The stench was overwhelming. She tightened herself against the chair. She pressed the back of her skull into the wall.
Breathe, Paul said. Deep breaths.
Click, squeak, click. A spray bottle. She knew the sound. The tiny spring in the handle. The sucking noise as the pump pulled up liquid. The click as the handle released. Paul said,
You're going to want to keep breathing.
The hood was getting wet. The thick cotton was getting heavy against her mouth and nose.
I like to think of this as my own special form of waterboarding.
Lydia sucked in great gulps of air.
It was piss.
He was spraying her with piss. She turned away her head. Paul followed her with the spray bottle. She turned the other way. He turned the bottle.
Keep breathing, he said.
Lydia opened her mouth. He adjusted the nozzle so the spray turned into a stream. The wet cotton molded to her lips. The hood became soaked. The material clogged her nostrils. Claustrophobia took over. She was going to suffocate. She inhaled a spray of liquid. She coughed and sucked in a mouthful of urine. Lydia gagged. Urine washed down her throat. She started to choke. He kept spraying, angling the stream no matter which way she turned her head. He was trying to drown her. She was going to drown in his urine.
Lydia.
Her lungs were paralyzed. Her heart strangled.
Lydia, Paul raised his voice. I put the spray bottle down. Stop panicking.
Lydia couldn't stop panicking. There was no more air. She had forgotten what to do. Her body couldn't remember how to draw breath.
Paul said, Lydia.
Lydia tried in vain to draw in more air. She saw flashes of light. Her lungs were going to explode.
Breathe out, he coached. You're only breathing in.
She breathed in harder. He was lying. He was lying. He was lying.
Lydia.
She was going to die. She couldn't work the muscles. Nothing was working. Everything had stopped, even the beats of her heart.
Lydia!
Explosions of light filled her eyes.
Brace yourself.
Paul punched her so hard in the stomach that she felt the metal chair bend into the wall. Her mouth opened. She huffed out a stream of warm, wet air.
Air. She had air.
Her lungs filled. Her head filled. She was dizzy. Her stomach burned. She collapsed forward in the chair. The chain cut into her ribs. Her cheek hit her knee. Blood rushed into her face. Her heart was pounding. Her lungs were screaming. The wet cotton hood hung down in front of her face. Piss-tainted air flowed into her open mouth and nose. Paul said,
It's weird how that happens, right?
Lydia concentrated on pulling air into her lungs and pushing it back out. She had crumbled so easily. He had sprayed piss in her face, and she had been ready to give up.
You're beating yourself up, Paul guessed. You've always thought you were the strong one, but you're not, are you? That's why you liked Coke so much. It gives you this sense of euphoria, like you can do anything in the world, but without it, you're completely powerless.
Lydia squeezed tears out of her eyes. She had to be stronger. She couldn't let him get into her head. He was too good at this. He knew exactly what he was doing to her. He hadn't just been behind the camera zooming in. He had participated.
Paul said, Now, Julia, she was a real fighter.
Lydia shook her head. She silently begged him not to do this.
You watched the tape. You saw how she fought back, even at the end.
Lydia tensed her body. She pulled at the plastic ties.
I watched you watching her die. Did you know that?
Paul sounded pleased with himself.
I gotta say, that was pretty meta.
The zip ties were ripping into her skin. She could feel the plastic teeth sawing back and forth.
My mom helped look for her, Paul said.
Dad and I got a big kick out of her, slipping on her boots every morning and trudging out into fields and checking streams and putting up flyers. Everybody was out looking for Julia Carroll, and Mom had no idea that she was hanging out in the barn.
Lydia remembered searching fields and rivers. She remembered the way the town rallied around her family, only to turn their backs 2 weeks later.
Well, Dad kept her alive for me.
She lasted 12 days,
if you can call that living.
He leaned forward. She could feel his excitement like it was a creature standing between them. They were all so close, Lydia.
Do you want me to tell you how close?
Lydia clenched her jaw shut.
Do you want me to tell you what it's like to fuck somebody when they're dying?
Lydia screamed.
What do you want from me?
You know what I want.
She knew what was coming. He had taken Lydia instead of Claire because he had business to finish.
"Do it," Lydia said.
He was right about the coke. He was right about everything. She wasn't strong enough to stand up to him. Her only hope was that it would be fast. "Just get it over with."
Paul laughed again. But it wasn't the delighted laugh he saved for Claire. It was the kind of laugh you gave when you thought someone was pitiful.
"Do you really think I want to rape a fat 40-year-old?
Lydia hated herself for feeling the sting of his words.
"I'm 41, you stupid motherfucker."
She braced herself for another punch, or a kick, or the spray bottle, but instead, he did something far worse than she could have ever imagined. He took off the hood. Lydia closed her eyes against the blinding light. She turned her head away. She hissed fresh air in and out between her teeth. Paul said,
"You can't keep your eyes closed forever."
She squinted, trying to get her eyes to adjust to the light. The first thing she saw was her own hands clutching the green vinyl pads on the arms of the chair. Then the concrete floor. Wadded up fast food bags. A stained mattress. Lydia looked up at Paul. He held out his hands like a magician finishing a trick. She had been tricked. The ambient sound was coming from a pair of computer speakers. The leaves under her feet were on the floor of the garage. The wall behind her was stained concrete block. They were not in an isolated cabin in the woods. Paul had brought her back to the Fuller house.
Chapter 17. Fred Nolan said, "Tell me about your relationship with your husband." Claire looked away from his smug face. They were in a cramped interrogation room inside the downtown FBI field office. She had her legs crossed under a cheap plastic table. Her foot was shaking uncontrollably. There was no clock in the room. Hours had passed. Claire had no idea how many, but she knew her self-imposed deadline for telling Paul how to get back the thumb drive had long passed. Nolan asked,
"Was he a nice guy? Romantic?"
Claire didn't answer. She felt sick with fear. Paul wouldn't be sending pictures of Lydia anymore. There was nothing to keep him in check. Would he be anxious? Angry? Did he know that Claire was talking to the police? Was he taking out his fury on Lydia?
Nolan said, "Me? I try to be romantic, but I always end up doing it wrong. Tulips instead of roses. Tickets to the wrong show."
Claire tasted bile in her mouth. She had seen the violence that Paul was capable of. With Claire on radio silence, what would he do to her sister?
"Claire?"
Tears filled her eyes. "Lydia." She had to help Lydia.
"Come on."
Nolan waited a full minute before letting out a long, disappointed sigh.
"You're just making this harder on yourself."
Claire stared up at the ceiling so her tears would not fall. The clock on the Tesla had read 6:48 when she'd pulled into the parking deck under the FBI building. How long ago had that been? Claire didn't even know whether or not it was still Sunday.
Nolan knocked on the table to get her attention. "You were married to the guy for almost 19 years. Tell me about him."
Claire blinked away the useless tears. None of this was going to get Lydia back. What could Claire do? Lydia had said it herself. She wasn't a superhero. Neither of them were. She turned her gaze to the large mirror that took up one side of the wall. Her reflection showed an exhausted woman with a dark circle under her left eye. Paul had punched her in the face. He had knocked her out. What was he doing to Lydia?
All right.
Nolan tried again.
How about this? Was he a Falcons guy or a Braves guy? Did he like sugar in his coffee?
Claire stared down at the table. She had to get herself under control. Panicking was not going to get her out of this room.
Nolan was playing nice for now. He hadn't arrested her for failing to appear at the scheduled meeting. He'd let her voluntarily follow the police officer to the FBI building. Once he had her inside, Nolan had reminded Claire of the terms of her parole. But he hadn't handcuffed her or threatened her with anything more dangerous than calling her parole officer to drug test her.
So, did this mean that Nolan was clean? Or that he was working with Paul?
Claire tried to push down her fear about what might be happening to Lydia and concentrate on what was happening in this airless room right now. Nolan wasn't asking any questions about the USB drive or the Fuller house. He hadn't stashed her in a dirty motel where he could beat the information out of her. He wasn't pushing her about Captain Mayhew or Adam Quinn or talking about how much fun it was to watch movies on rainy nights. He was drilling her about her fucking relationship.
Claire asked, "What time is it?"
Nolan said, "Time is a flat circle."
Claire gave an exaggerated groan. She was going to start screaming if she didn't get out of this room. She had Lydia's phone stashed down the front of her bra. Claire had turned it off after calling her mother. She couldn't text or call Paul. She didn't know her lawyer's phone number. She couldn't call Rick after telling him to take Dee and run as far as he could go. In the last 24 years, Claire had never once asked Helen for anything. Why on earth had she thought that reaching out to her now was a good idea?
Claire.
She finally looked at Nolan. This is the fifth time you've asked me a variation on that same question.
Humor me.
For how much longer?
You're free to go.
He indicated the door, and they both knew he meant free to go to her parole officer, because Nolan knew there were drugs in her system. Maybe he even knew that there was a gun in Claire's car. She had stashed the revolver in the driver's side door pocket, because that was slightly less obvious than hiding it in the trunk. She said, "I need to go to the bathroom."
"I'll get a female agent to escort you."
Claire clenched her jaw. 3 times she had asked to use the bathroom. 3 times a female agent had taken her to the handicapped restroom and watched Claire use the toilet. She asked Nolan, "Are you scared I'm going to flush myself?"
"Maybe you've got some drugs hidden in your clothes. You've been hanging around your sister a lot lately."
He had played this card already. Claire did not rise to the bait.
"Still, might be worth calling in a female agent to search you."
He was silent long enough to make Claire sweat. She didn't care if they found the gun inside the Tesla, but Lydia's iPhone was her only lifeline to Paul. There was no passcode on the phone. She could practically hear Paul lecturing her on the importance of using passcodes.
Nolan slapped his palms down on the table. "You know, Claire, you should really start answering my questions."
"Why?"
"Because I'm with the FBI. My side always wins."
"You keep saying that, but I do not think those words mean what you think they mean." He nodded appreciatively.
"Rockin' a little Inigo Montoya. I like it."
She looked at the mirror, wondering which great and powerful Oz was watching them. Johnny Jackson was her first bet. Captain Jacob Mayhew. Maybe even Paul. She could very well see him having the balls to walk into an FBI field office just to watch her squirm. Maybe they had invited him. Nolan asked, "Would you say that your relationship with Paul was good?" Claire gave in a little, because stonewalling hadn't worked the last five times. "Yes, I would say that my relationship with my husband was good."
"Because?"
"Because he certainly knew how to fuck me." Nolan took the baser meaning. "I've always wondered what it'd feel like to climb behind the wheel of a Lamborghini." He winked. "More of a Pinto man myself." Claire had never found self-deprecating men attractive. She stared at the two-way mirror. "Paul was good friends with Johnny Jackson. Do you know him?"
"The congressman?"
Nolan shifted in his chair.
"Sure. Everybody's heard of him."
"He did a lot for Paul."
"Is that right?"
"Yes." She kept her eyes on the mirror. "He gave Quinn and Scott billions in government contracts. Did you know that?"
"I did."
Claire let her gaze travel back to Nolan. "Do you want me to tell you about Congressman Jackson and his relationship with Paul?"
"Sure."
Nolan's tone was even.
"We could start there."
Claire studied the man closely. She couldn't get a read off him.
Was he afraid? Was he eager?
Johnny was an FBI agent back in the early 90s.
"That's true."
Claire waited for more. "And?"
"He was one of the shittiest agents this office has ever seen."
"I don't recall reading that in his official bio."
Nolan shrugged. He didn't seem afraid that Jackson would break through the mirror and strangle him.
Claire said, "He's been all over the press conferences with the Kilpatrick family."
"I said he was a shitty agent, not a shitty politician."
Claire still couldn't read the man's expression. "You don't sound like a fan." Nolan clasped his hands together on the table.
"On the surface, it seems like we're making progress, but when I think back on the last few minutes of our conversation, I get the feeling that you're questioning me instead of the other way around."
"You'll make a great detective one day."
"Fingers crossed."
He flashed a grin.
"I want to tell you something about the FBI."
"You always win?"
"Sure, there's that. And terrorists, of course. Kidnappers, bank robbers, pedophiles, nasty fuckers. But nuts and bolts, what we at the old FBI deal in day to day is curiosities. Did you know that?"
Claire didn't respond. He'd clearly given this speech before. Nolan continued.
"Local cops, they find something curious they can't figure out, and they bring it to us. And we either agree that it's curious, or we don't. And generally, when we agree, it's not just the one curious thing, it's several curious things."
He held up his index finger.
"Curious thing number one. Your husband embezzled $3 million from his company."
"Only $3 million.
That's curious. Because you're loaded, right?"
Claire nodded.
"Curious thing number two." He added a second finger. "Paul went to college with Quinn. He shared a dorm room with the guy. And then, when they were in grad school together, they shared an apartment. And then Quinn was best man at your wedding, and then they started the business together, right?"
Claire nodded again.
"They've been best friends for almost 21 years. And it seemed curious to me that after 21 years, Quinn figures out his best buddy is stealing from their company. The one they built together from the ground up. But instead of going to his buddy and saying, "Hey, what the fuck, buddy?" Quinn goes straight to the FBI. The way he put it together did seem curious. But Claire only said, "Okay." Nolan held up a third finger. Curious thing number three. Quinn didn't go to the cops. He went to the FBI. "You have domain over financial crimes." "You've been reading our website." Nolan seemed pleased. "But let me ask you again, is that what you'd do if your best friend of 21 years stole a small, almost negligible amount of money from your zillion-dollar company? Find the biggest, baddest stick to fuck him with?" The question gave Claire a different answer. Adam had turned Paul into the FBI, which meant that Adam and Paul were not getting along. Either Adam Quinn didn't know about the movies, or he knew about the movies and he was trying to screw over Paul. Claire asked Nolan, "What did you do next?"
"How's that?"
"You investigated Adam's complaint about the money. You must have talked to the accountants. You traced the money back to Paul, and then what?"
"I arrested him."
"Where?"
"Where?"
Nolan repeated.
"That's a funny question."
"Humor me." Nolan chuckled again. He was enjoying this.
"I arrested him in his fancy office down the street. I put the handcuffs on him myself. Frog marched him through the front lobby."
"You surprised him." Claire knew the kinds of things Paul left behind when he was surprised. "Did you check his computer?"
"Another funny question."
"You have your curious things. I have my funny questions." He drummed his fingers on the table.
"Yes, I checked his computer."
Claire nodded, but not for the reason Nolan would be thinking. If Adam had known about the movies, he would have made sure that they weren't on Paul's computer when the cops came. The first thing Paul would have done is point the finger back at his partner, which meant that Fred Nolan had just handed Claire compelling proof that Adam was not involved in Paul's side business after all.
"So what do you say?"
Nolan asked.
"Quid pro quo, Clarice?"
They stared at each other again, this time with hope instead of hostility. Could she trust Fred Nolan? He worked with the FBI. Then again, so had Johnny Jackson. Maybe Nolan's trash talk about the congressman was meant to draw her out. Give a little, get a little more. Or perhaps Nolan was being truthful. Paul was always telling Claire that she never trusted people, that she held back too much. She asked, "What do you want to know?" A smile broke across his face.
"Did Paul slip you something before he died?"
"The key tag." She almost laughed with relief. This entire dance had been to move them toward the key tag. Claire chose to sound obtuse. "Are you making some kind of sexual innuendo because of what my husband and I were doing in the alley?"
"No."
The question clearly knocked him off his game.
"Absolutely not. I just want to know if he slipped you, gave you, something. Anything. It could be small or big or..."
Claire stood up. "You're disgusting."
"Wait." He stood up too. "I'm not being an asshole."
Claire employed one of Grandma Jenny's quips.
If you have to say you're not doing something, then you probably are.
I need you to sit down.
Nolan wasn't playing around anymore. There was nothing flirty or silly about his tone.
Please.
Claire sat back down, her spine straight in the chair. She could almost feel the power shifting back to her side. Nolan was going to lay all of his cards on the table, and she knew what the first card would be before he even showed his hand.
He said, "He's alive."
Claire asked, "Frankenstein?"
"No."
Nolan smoothed down his tie.
"Paul." "He's not dead."
Claire twisted her face into what she hoped was an expression of disbelief.
"Your husband is alive."
"I am sick of your bullshit, Agent Nolan." She forced some haughtiness into her voice. "I knew you were reprehensible, but I didn't know you were cruel."
"I'm sorry."
He held out his hands as if none of this was his fault.
"I'm being straight with you. Your husband is alive."
Claire tried to show surprise, but it felt too fake. She looked away. Coldness had always worked to her advantage. "I don't believe you."
"No more bullshit," Nolan said. "We helped him fake his death."
Claire kept her gaze turned away. She had to remind herself that she wasn't supposed to know the extent of Paul's crimes. "You're telling me that the FBI helped my husband fake his death over $3 million?
"No. What I told you before is the truth. The embezzlement charges were dropped. That was settled between your husband and his partner. But we found some other things while we were investigating the initial complaint. Things that were a hell of a lot more curious than some missing cash."
Nolan didn't elaborate.
"We realized that Paul had information we needed. Volatile information. His life would have been in danger if it got out that he was talking. And we needed him alive to testify at the trial."
Claire's cheeks were wet. She was crying. Why was she crying? Nolan said,
"He was mixed up in some things, bad things, with some bad people."
She touched her fingers to her face. The tears were real. How could that be?
"He asked to go into witness protection."
Nolan waited for her to say something. When she didn't, he continued,
"My bosses felt like he might be planning to run, so we moved up the day it was supposed to happen. We picked Paul up on his way to see you. Taped him up with the squibs, that's like a plastic balloon with fake blood, and told him it was going down in the alley."
Claire stared at her wet fingertips in disbelief. She couldn't be crying for Paul. She wasn't that stupid. Was she crying for herself? For Lydia? For her mother who had never come? Claire looked up at Nolan. He'd stopped talking. She should say something now. Ask a question, make a comment. She said, "Did you know Paul was going to meet me? That I would see it?"
"That was part of the agreement."
This time, Nolan looked away.
"He wanted it to happen in front of you."
Claire's hands were shaking again. She longed for a time when nothing on her body shook with rage or fear or whatever mixture of hate and betrayal she was feeling right now. "The paramedics."
"We're undercover agents. Detective Raymond was in on it, too."
"The man at the funeral home?" "It's amazing what people will do for you when you threaten to sic the IRS on their financial records." "They asked me if I wanted to see the body."
"Paul said that you wouldn't."
Claire clenched her fists. She hated that he knew her so well. What if he was wrong, and I asked to see it?
What's not like on TV? We show you the image on a screen. The body's usually in another room with a camera pointed on it.
Claire shook her head. She couldn't fathom the level of deceit at play. All to help Paul. All to give him a new life without Claire.
I'm sorry.
Nolan reached into his jacket. He handed Claire a handkerchief. She stared at the neatly folded white cloth. His initials were embroidered in the corner. She said the things she had wanted to say to Paul.
I watched him die. He was in my arms. I felt his skin go cold.
A lot can happen in your head when you're in a bad situation like that.
You think I imagined those things? I saw blood pouring out of him.
Yeah, we put two squibs on him. Probably could have gotten away with just one.
But the knife...
The knife was fake, too. Retractable. The plastic on the squibs only takes a little bit of pressure.
The killer.
Claire thought of the snake tattoo on the man's neck. He looked real.
Yeah, well, he's a real bad guy. One of my confidential informants, a low-level drug dealer who'll do anything to stay out of jail.
Claire put her hand to her head, where the snake man had nearly ripped open her scalp.
Yeah, sorry. He got a little carried away, but Paul went off script, and my guy got pissed. That thing at the end where Paul turned into a ninja turtle, that was not in the program.
She patted the edge of the handkerchief underneath her eyes. She was still crying. This was crazy. She wasn't in mourning. Why was she crying?
Nolan said, "The ambulance brought Paul to the parking garage downstairs. He was supposed to have some information on him, but, surprise, he didn't have it."
Nolan was obviously still angry about this part.
"He told me it was in his car. We waited until nightfall, just me and him, very low-key. We were walking down the street talking about next steps. Your husband's all about the big picture. Then we get to his car, and he's rummaging around inside the glove box, and I'm thinking, what the fuck? Do I look like a fiddle that needs playing? And he says, here it is. And I'm thinking, he's just being an asshole because the guy's a real asshole. And he comes out of the car, and I've got my hand palm up like some kind of stupid kid thinking he's gonna get some candy, and boom, the asshole cold cocks me."
Claire looked at the yellow-purple swirl around Nolan's eye.
"I know, right?" Nolan pointed to his eye. "Dropped me like a sack of hammers. I was seeing Tweety Birds, and then I was seeing that asshole skipping up the street like a fucking schoolgirl. He turns around at the corner and gives me one of these."
Nolan gave two thumbs up as he flashed a fake grin.
"By the time I managed to peel my sorry ass off the sidewalk, turn the corner myself, he's in the wind."
Nolan looked both annoyed and impressed.
"I gotta say, it's not the only reason, but it's part of the reason I really, really want to find your husband."
Claire shook her head. This still didn't make sense. Paul asking to be placed in witness protection? He would never hand someone else control over his life. They wouldn't let him be an architect in witness protection. They wouldn't let him draw attention to himself or his career accomplishments. There had to be something else he was trying to get out of the FBI. She was missing a detail or a stray word that would put together the puzzle.
Nolan said, "Look, I know I've been a dick, but I wasn't sure whether or not you knew about your husband's extracurricular activities."
"The embezzling?"
"No, not that. Like I said, the money case is closed as far as we're concerned. I mean the other stuff.
Claire stared in disbelief. How could anyone think she would know about the movies and sit idly by? But Nolan hadn't talked about the movies. He had only talked about Paul knowing some bad people who were mixed up in some bad things. She asked, what else was he involved in?
Maybe it's good you don't know, Nolan said. I can tell he kept you in the dark. Think of it as a blessing. I see your hand shaking, the confusion in your eyes. But you need to understand that the man you loved, the guy you thought you were married to, is dead. He doesn't exist anymore. Hell, maybe he never existed.
He wasn't telling Claire anything she did not know. Why do you think that?
We had a shrink take a look at him. WITSEC, that's Witness Security with the Marshals Service. They always want a profile of anybody they put into the system. Kind of like a cheat sheet so they can predict behavior.
Claire doubted a stadium full of shrinks could predict her husband's behavior. And?
He's a nonviolent, borderline psychopath.
They were wrong about the nonviolent part. Borderline, she asked. Why did she want to hold on to that word? To think that Paul wasn't a total psychopath because he was still capable of loving her?
Nolan said, he's been living a parallel life. There's the guy who's married to this beautiful woman and has this successful career and lives in a million-dollar mansion. And then there's the real guy who's not very nice.
Not very nice, Claire echoed. What a massive fucking understatement. You said they found him nonviolent.
They did, but I'm the dumbass who took a hit in the eye, so I'm bound to think otherwise.
Why were you helping him if he's such a bad person?
Because the real Paul Scott knows the identity of a very bad man who needs to be in prison for a very long time.
Nolan glanced back at the mirror.
That's all I can tell you. Straight up, no bullshit. That's how the system works. You can do something bad. We let you go if you can point us towards somebody doing worse. And believe me, this is a hell of a lot worse.
Claire looked down at her hands. Clever Paul. He hadn't just fooled Claire with his movie editing skills. He had fooled the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They had found the disgusting movies on his work computer, and he had dangled the identity of the masked man in front of their faces in return for his freedom. She asked Fred Nolan a question she knew she would eventually ask herself. You said he wanted to go into witness protection. He was just going to leave me? Just like that?
I'm sorry. But trust me, you're better off.
Did Adam Quinn know about the other stuff Paul was mixed up in? The name of the bad man?
No. We grilled the shit out of him. He had no idea.
Nolan picked up on her distress.
I can see why you stepped out on your husband. He really didn't deserve you.
Claire agreed, but she had caught Nolan in a lie. If Paul was planning to run, why would he slip me something before we went into the alley?
Backup plan?
Nolan guessed.
There was no guarantee he'd be able to get the drop on me.
I want to get this straight. Claire turned around all the cards he'd just laid out so he could see them from her perspective. You caught Paul doing something bad. Something worse than embezzling. He told you that he knows the identity of this boogeyman. You said he was taking you to his car to show you some kind of proof. So I'm going to guess That's a photograph or a document or something electronic, which means it has to be stored on a piece of paper or a disk or a flash drive or something like that. Something he could fit in his glove box. Something that could be slipped to me before we went into the alley. Nolan shrugged, but she could read him now, and she could tell that he was getting nervous. You also said that Paul's life would have been in danger if it got out that he was sharing this information about the boogeyman.
Right.
So that gives you all the power. Paul needs you more than you need him. I mean, yes, you want to make a case, but Paul wants to live. You said his life was in danger. You're the only one with the resources to protect him. So why is he hiding from you? Nolan didn't glance back at the two-way mirror, but he might as well have. Claire tried to look at the situation from a different angle. Paul's angle. He'd escaped from Nolan, but he hadn't run off to an island country with no extradition treaty. Claire had no doubt that Paul had a secret stash of money waiting for him somewhere. He'd probably already ordered the gladiator cabinets for the garage. He'd admitted to her over the phone that the timeline had been pushed up. But that didn't explain why he was sticking around. The FBI couldn't find him. But as Lydia would say, so what? Paul was a free man. He didn't need to go into witness protection. He didn't need the FBI. He didn't need anything. Except for whatever was on the USB drive. The door shook as someone pounded a fist against the flimsy wood.
Claire!
Claire recognized the angry voice of her lawyer on the other side of the door. Wynn Wallace. The Colonel.
Claire!
Wynn tried the knob. The door was locked.
Keep your goddamn mouth shut!
Nolan told Claire. You can refuse his counsel. So you can keep lying to me?
Claire!
Wynn yelled. Claire stood up. You're asking the wrong question, Fred. Wynn tried to shoulder open the door. There was a sharp crack. Nolan said,
Tell me the right question.
Paul didn't give you the information you wanted, therefore his life isn't in danger. He should be on a beach somewhere. Why is he sticking around? Nolan hacked like a dog with a string down its throat.
You've seen him?
Claire opened the door. Wynn Wallace stormed into the room.
What the hell is going on here?
Nolan tried to stand up, but Wynn blocked him, demanding,
Who the hell are you? I want your ID number and your supervisor's name right now.
Claire, Nolan tried.
Don't go.
Claire edged her way out the door. She fumbled for Lydia's phone in her bra. The metal was hot. She pressed the button to power on the phone. She stared at the screen, silently begging for a message from Paul. Sweet Pea? Claire spun around. She wondered if she was hallucinating. Mom? Helen was near tears. We've been halfway around the state. They wouldn't tell us where you were. She cupped her hand to Claire's face. Are you all right? Claire was trembling again. She couldn't stop. It was like she was standing on the beach in the middle of a hurricane. Everything was slamming into her at once. Come with me. Helen took her hand. She pulled Claire down the hallway. They didn't wait for the elevator. Helen led her to the stairs. Claire looked down at the phone as she followed her mother. The signal was strong. No calls, no voicemail. There was one new text. A photograph that had been sent a few minutes after Claire turned off the phone. Lydia was still in the trunk. Her face didn't show any new cuts or bruises, but her eyes were closed. Why were her eyes closed?
Helen said, "Just a little bit farther." Claire put the phone in her back pocket. Lydia had blinked when Paul took the picture. Or she was tired. She had closed her eyes against the sun. No, it was dark in the photo. Lydia was being contrary. She didn't want Paul to get his way. She was trying to make trouble because that's what Lydia did. Claire's knees felt weak. She almost stumbled. Helen helped her down another 2 flights of stairs. Finally, she saw the sign for the lobby. Instead of going through the marked door, Helen took her through the emergency exit. The sunlight was faint, but Claire still shielded her eyes with her hand. She looked around. They were standing on the corner of Peachtree and Alexander. Traffic was starting to fill the streets. She asked Helen, "What time is it?" 5:30 in the morning. Claire leaned back against the wall. She had been inside the building for almost 12 hours. What could Paul do to Lydia in 12 hours? Claire. She waited for her mother to lay into her, to demand an explanation for why she had to find a lawyer and rescue her daughter from the FBI. Instead, Helen stroked Claire's cheek and asked, "What can I do to help?" Claire was speechless with gratitude. She felt like decades had passed since someone had offered her something as simple and genuine as help. "Sweetheart," Helen said, "nothing is so bad that it can't be fixed." She was so wrong. But Claire forced herself to nod. Helen stroked back her hair. "I'll take you home, okay? I'll make you some soup and tuck you into bed and you can get some sleep. And we can talk this out. Or not. It's up to you, sweetheart. Whatever you need me to do, I'm here." Claire felt herself start to crack. She turned away from her mother's touch, because the only other option was to fall into her arms and tell her everything. "Sweet pea," Helen rubbed her back. "Tell me what I can do." Claire opened her mouth to tell her mother there was nothing that could be done. But she stopped, because she saw someone familiar standing 50 feet away. Detective Harvey Falk. She recognized him from the Dunwoody police station. Captain Mayhew had called him in to help connect the massive hard drive to his computer so that he could tell Claire that the movies Paul had been watching were fake. Harvey was leaning against a railing. His suit jacket was open, showing his gun. He wasn't being shy about it. He was looking directly at Claire. His lips smiled under his bushy mustache. "Claire?" Helen sounded even more concerned. She had seen the man, too. "Who is?" "The Tesla is parked downstairs on the 3rd level." She took the key fob out of her pocket. "I need you to move it to the Marriott Marquis for me, okay? Visitors parking. Leave the ticket on the seat and hide the key fob behind the parking pay machine in the lobby." Miraculously, Helen still did not demand an explanation. "Is there anything else you need?" "No." She squeezed Claire's hand before leaving. Claire waited until her mother disappeared into the FBI building. She walked down the street. She forced herself not to look over her shoulder as she reached the corner. She crossed against the light, dodging around a yellow taxi. She took West Peachtree toward downtown. She finally looked behind her. Harvey was 30 yards away. His arms were bent at the elbows as he tried to catch up with her. His jacket billowed out. His gun was dark and menacing against his white dress shirt. Claire picked up the pace. She regulated her breathing. She tried to keep her heart rate under control. She looked behind her. Harvey was 20 yards away.
Lydia's phone started ringing. Claire pulled it from her back pocket as she started to jog. She looked at the screen. Unknown number. Paul said,
"Did you enjoy your time at the FBI?"
"Is Lydia okay?"
"I'm not sure."
Claire crossed the street again. A car screeched to a stop inches away from her hip. The driver yelled out his open window. She asked Paul, "Do you want that USB drive or not?"
"Lydia's fine. What did you tell the FBI?"
"Nothing. That's why they kept me so long." Claire looked over her shoulder. Harvey was closer, maybe 15 yards away. "A cop is following me, one of Mayhew's guys."
"Get rid of him."
Claire ended the call. She jogged across the street. She knew this area of town because she had worked in the Flatiron Building when they first moved to Atlanta. Claire had hated the job. She took long walks during lunch and came back late and flirted with her boss so he would let her leave early. She started jogging again. Harvey was quickly closing the gap between them. He was a big man with a long stride. He was going to catch up with her soon. Claire turned the corner onto Spring Street. She lunged into a full run. She was at the next corner by the time Harvey rounded the building. Claire went halfway down the side street. She checked over her shoulder. Harvey hadn't made the corner yet. She frantically looked for an escape route. The Southern Company's side entrance was the closest option. There were 6 glass doors and a large revolving door at the far end. She tried the first door, but it was locked. She tried the next one, then the next one. She looked back for Harvey, still not there, but he would be running now, catching up fast. She tried another door, then wanted to kick herself for not going to the revolving door first. Claire ran full bore into the open mouth of the door. She pushed so hard against the glass partition that she heard the motor grind. The lobby was cordoned off by glass turnstiles. The sleepy guard behind the counter was smiling. He had probably watched her try each door.
"I'm sorry."
Claire pitched up her voice a few octaves so she sounded helpless.
"I know it's awful of me to ask, but can I use your restroom?"
The guard smiled.
"Anything for a pretty lady."
He reached under the desk and opened one of the turnstiles.
"Go straight through to the main lobby on West Pete Street. The bathrooms are on the right."
"Thank you so much."
Claire walked briskly through the partition. She looked behind her. Harvey raced past the side entrance doors. She had 2 seconds of relief before he came back. Claire darted into an elevator alcove. She kept her head turned so she could see him. Harvey started toward the building. He pulled on one of the locked doors. He was clearly winded. His breath fogged the glass. He wiped it away with his jacket sleeve. He cupped his hands to his eyes and peered into the lobby. The guard mumbled something under his breath. Claire pressed her back against the elevator doors. Harvey pushed away from the glass. Instead of leaving, he moved toward the revolving door. Claire tensed herself. She would tell the guard that Harvey was stalking her. Then Harvey would flash his badge. She could run toward the front entrance, dart back into the street. Or she could stay here. Harvey hadn't pushed through the revolving door. He was still standing outside. His head was turned to the right. Something on West Peachtree had caught his attention. Claire held her breath until he ran off toward whatever had distracted him. She peeled herself away from the alcove. She went back out the glass turnstile. She told the guard,
"Thank you."
He tipped his hat.
"You have a blessed day."
Claire pushed open the door. She knew better than to think she was safe. She ran back toward Spring Street. She hooked a left onto Williams. Her feet pounded against the cracked sidewalk. There was a mist of rain in the air. Claire scanned the area behind her as she kept running. She tried to orient herself. Staying on the street was not an option. There had to be somewhere to hide,
but it was too early for any of